CBS Eye on the World, I'm John Batchelor. The COVID-19 virus in 2023. We're told there are variants around the world in China and in the United States and in Europe. The one I'm looking at in particular, reported routinely in the news, is XBB. I welcome Dr. Henry Miller, a physician. Henry is the Glenn Swagger Distinguished Fellow at the American Council on Science and Health, measuring XBB and other variants around the world and what the future looks like, especially for the most vulnerable. That would be over 60, over 65, without adequate vaccination. Dr. Miller, Henry, a very good evening to you. XBB, what is it that makes it distinct? Because I hear anecdotes only. Oh, it's a bad flu, John, but that's from a younger person. Good evening to you.
Good evening, John. Well, this is a subvariant of XBB. It's called XBB 0.1.5, and it's the most transmissible, the most infectious subvariant yet of the coronavirus. It's a subvariant of Omicron. All the recent ones have been. And what makes this particular subvariant so infectious is that it's stickier. It has greater affinity for the sites at which the virus binds on the host cells, whether the host cells are in the nose or the throat or the lungs. And so because it binds with greater affinity, it's stickier. It's infectious with fewer numbers of virus exposure. So, in other words, if you could fend off, say, I'm making up numbers, if you could fend off 1,000 viral particles with earlier subvariants, it may be that only 200 can cause an infection of this new subvariant because it has greater affinity for its binding sites. It also seems to cause a slightly different spectrum of symptoms, but not appreciably different, and not appreciably different in virulence, that is, the severity of the infection compared to its predecessors.
You've been my guide on these variants, Henry, for as long as we've known about the COVID-19. And this is more of what you told me was coming, which is evolution, constant evolution, and sometimes worse and sometimes better. Is this indefinitely the future? Is COVID always with us now?
I'm afraid it is for the foreseeable future, especially because, as you know, you and I have discussed many times that this is all a game of probabilities. The progress of the pandemic depends on several factors, on the probability of several things. So there's the characteristics of the pathogenic organism itself, whether it becomes more infectious and virulent, the state of immunity in the population from either vaccination or previous infection, our ability to treat the infection, and lastly, the willingness of the population to behave in ways that prevent infection. Now, preventing infection is key because with every infection, the virus replicates itself many times, and there are new mutants created. And with each mutant, you have the opportunity for Darwinian evolution to work its magic and select for the fittest. And of course, it's the fittest that survive and go on to spread and cause new infections, and also to develop new characteristics. And that's what we really worry about. We worry about a new subvariant that's not only more infectious but also causes more severe disease, like MERS or SARS, which had a very high mortality rate.
Henry, the vaccine. I've had 5 different vaccinations, 4 of them Moderna, the 5th one was Pfizer, very effective for the years that I have not been just here in the farmland in Connecticut. I've also wandered the earth during the worst of the virus when there was no vaccine. This is 2020, 2021, Turkey even. and have been lucky. That's all, lucky. However, now I consider myself well defended. Am I? Are these variants able to evade the vaccines that I've had?
Well, what we know is that the immunity conferred by vaccines, or for that matter, from natural infection, wanes with time. And you, like me, like many of us, are now getting farther out from any of the vaccinations. And so the protection has waned. It does seem to provide pretty good protection, though, against severe disease, hospitalization, and death. That's the good news. But the bad news is that, as I alluded to a moment ago, we're having so many infections that we're getting new mutants and the possibility of new bad mutants that are not only better able to evade the immunity conferred by vaccines or natural infection, but that have worse characteristics, such as causing more severe disease. One thing that's important is that there are a couple of ways that viruses change their genetic complement, that the different ways that they mutate. And up till now, what we've been seeing primarily are what are called point mutations. So, you know, there are in RNA, which is the genetic material of this virus, there are four building blocks. And so as they replicate, you sometimes get a mistake made as they reproduce themselves, and you get a G substituted for a U, for example, in these building blocks. But the new variant that we've been talking about, XBB.1.5, is a different kind of mutant. It's called a recombinant, and it has resulted from the interchange of genetic material from two discrete viruses that were present in the same cell in a person, in the same cell at the same time. And that involves an exchange of large amounts of genetic material and a brand new virus that contains elements of those two parents. That constitutes a major change and makes it more likely that you will have a major change in characteristics of the resulting virus. That's something to worry about. It's the way that we get, it's similar to the way that we get particularly worrisome virulent varieties of flu virus, and that's where avian flu and porcine flu outbreaks occur, when you get this recombination or reassortment of genes that constitute a new virus.
What is to be done? I learn from reporting that the U.S. has a very low vaccination rate. I was surprised by that, given the skill of our biologists and people who produce the vaccine so miraculously. However, there it is. So what is to be done is something that resembles, you always remind me, I should think of it as Swiss cheese. What does that mean, Henry?
Well, there's a very interesting diagram, a graphic that viewers can look up by Googling Swiss cheese model and COVID. And it has vertical slices of Swiss cheese that, of course, have holes in them. And what it implies is that you need to do a variety of interventions represented by each slice of cheese that lowers the probability that virus will get through and infect you. So there are certain mechanical barriers that you can put up, mask, vaccination, good ventilation, and so on. And all of these combine to lower the probability, if you implement them, combine to lower the probability that you'll become infected. And with all of that implies a severe acute illness and also long COVID, which we're finding not only can be debilitating, but actually has a significant mortality rate down the road as well.
So what we have now is vigilance. That's what that's part of the Swiss cheese. Wearing a mask, especially when you're exposed to large populations, having remediation available of Paxlovid, et cetera. And Henry, this is indefinite, yes? I mean, I'm lucky enough to be a senior citizen. I should always be on the guard for this, no matter the season, for the rest of my days. Is that correct, Dr. Miller? We have about 30 seconds.
Well, for the time being, John, yes. We need to avoid being infected with masks and wise behavior, and also of keeping up with our vaccines. There probably will be new boosters sometime this year.
Dr. Henry Miller, he is the Glenn Swager Distinguished Fellow at the American Council on Science and Health. He's a physician, founding director of the FDA's Office of Biotechnology. This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor.
You're listening to CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.